Jema. So we continue the series on collected works of the Madhava, volume 12 on education. And we have completed last time over a period of few talks, her articles, essays and articles. And from today we take up some of her messages on the center of education. And they are very fascinating. But first, a little bit about the origin. So, with Mother and Sri Aurobindo, everything that they have manifested, it starts from within outward. This is a fundamental thing about the yoga. And they are working. So, they don't try to just do things on the surface. Their work is not a denting and painting work. It's a complete change. So, outer change is the last to manifest. And very often we expect that to come first, because we are used to polishing people on the surface so that they speak well, well-mannered, well-behaved. They are very decent outwardly, but inwardly it is the same human nature. So they don't want to do that. So it's like naturally, organically, like you plant a seed and the seed will grow into a tree, given the right conditions. So this is their whole way, that plant the seed, the right seed, and give the right conditions. Then of course it will have its own journey, it's an adventure. But this is the method, not just outwardly polish. So this is the same principle they have done in the ashram. She herself said that it was not one of those things where you plan and start an ashram. Okay, let's start the ashram. And then let's invite people, send a message that, you know, people should come and join. No, they're just the opposite of how Mother and Sri Aurobindo have done things. Because sometimes people try to do that. That, you know, we are inviting people. No, it's not like that. She started, rather it just grew. People who were around Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, all that Sri Aurobindo said is from now Mother will take charge. And then slowly people came. They came, why? Because of her presence. So the principle is that the core has to be set right, core has to be beautiful, things have to be clear in the core, then slowly things will come, like a flower attracts honeybees. So that's the whole principle. So the center of education has a very interesting history, that in World War II, in 1940, some parents started coming. So again, it was not like, oh, we have to start a school so that Shobindo's message can be given. This way of starting is absolutely just the wrong way. It doesn't work like that. That we'll open a school and, you know, school in Mother's name and Shobindo's name because we have to do some activity. This has to come from deep inside. Now, for her, it was the World War II, and she says it left at her doorsteps a package with small little children, no bigger. She is like thumbs, little tiny children. So she says, because of their coming, we had to take up a problem which she wanted to take up later. That there is a problem of family and children. The Mother and Sri Aurobindo had not taken up that because it was a very strict atmosphere. So all the ashramites were all into what can be called as a serious sadhana. Now people don't understand this background, so they don't understand how the ashram works, because they expect the same thing. But this problem sometime or the other had to be taken, of family life and children. You can't cut off that entire part of world and society as not qualified for yoga. So the Mother says that we took it early, because that's how nature and everything worked out like that. You can't say that no, go away from here, we don't have place. And so it changed the entire way the ashram was, like little children going around, running around, jumping around, and playing with these sadhaks. So many stories, fascinating stories, I know from some of those who were the earliest ones. And if you ask them, they would remember those days very happily. Some of them playing ringa roses, even with the Mother, down where now the meditation hall is. So it totally was a challenging atmosphere to the sadhaks here. But this was the play, divine leela. So she says, we took a problem which would have been normally postponed for later. But in a way it is good. But she says this has delayed the the pace at which the the supramental realization was moving on, it delayed because all kinds of things came, parents came, children came, you can't expect them to do yoga. Then teachers came, who came part of, attracted to the teacher, being a teacher or to teach, not primarily for yoga. So all this created a kind of mixture, but she says that, well, doesn't matter, now that we have taken it, once we set it right, then it will go much faster. So that's how the Mother and Sri Aurobindo have worked and continue to work. So in 1940, these people started coming, and 43 kind of formal classes started, because children have to learn something. So it was, there were no school like that. So they would go to learn from this teacher or that person. So they started teaching. There were hardly about 20 children. So with those 20 children, the school was started. And then in 1951, 24th April, she opened a formal International Sri Aurobindo International University Center. It was first an international university center, then 24th April, then 2nd December it was formally. It was conceived on 24th April, then 2nd December 51, formally it was Sri Aurobindo International University Center was inaugurated. So that we know people had come, so 2nd December became a very important date. Then later on, I think 59, the name was changed to Sri Aurobindo International Center of Education on 6th of January. So you see, these dates are all still part of the ashram school ethos. So 6th January, the name was changed. All that story, history is not important. But the idea was to prepare these children for the future, so that instead of continuing the old ways of life, habits, concepts and which they carry from the so-called sanskaras are both good and bad, but nevertheless she wanted to prepare these children for the future, and so she initiated this school with the idea of a free progress system. So the word free makes one feel children can do whatever they feel like. Well, she meant by free progress education guided by the soul, mother's own definition. If you have to translate into Hindi, the perfect word for this is swadharma, education guided by your soul. So swadharma is that way of life, law of living, which is guided by your soul, the anguish of your soul. Just as swabhav is the divine impulsion in you. So basically, it was based on the most ancient Indian truths, which was not at all how it has become formal, institutionalized, etc. She saw that the age of institution is coming to an end. And that is so true. Wherever highly institutionalized, organized, hyper-organized thing, they are going to crash because the mind tries to do it, but it doesn't work. Nevertheless, so there were in the beginning about 150 teachers for 450 students. So we cannot imagine. 150 teachers for 450 students from kindergarten right up to, 1959-60 I am saying, right up to knowledge. So this is something very interesting. Another interesting thing is that no student is charged money and no teacher is paid. So they are all teachers who come voluntarily and offer their work, and they come from here, they are God knows from where, and they are moved. The ashram works like that. Nobody calls anyone or invites, oh, we need somebody for this particular faculty, please come. Sometimes people have this idea that, I've been very good in teaching mathematics, I want to teach in ashram school. It doesn't work like that. So how it will happen here, mother knows. See, one has to surrender. So people have come, and like that they came, started teaching part of the physics, science and mathematics is in French. All the others are basically in English. And it's very interesting. French is one of the main languages which actually holds them in good stead all over the world. I know this by example, that people who have studied French here, and Sri Aurobindo said it also brings you a little close to one aspect of the mother. It's the language of the guru. So it's known, Guru Mukhi in Punjabi, it was very well known thing that if you learn the language of the master, it helps. And now it's very interesting that when they go out, this center of education, there are no degrees, no diploma. So, no test, no examination. And the reason was that she wants children to learn by self-motivation. And not because of external compulsion to perform and to get grades and to get a job. So it's a very different basis. And there were very few who were ready for it. At one point somebody asks a question to the mother, "Mother, there are only 7 out of 150 who have, you know, chosen to even stay back or who are really interested in." I say, 7 out of 150, that's very good. I know directly one of the students who is now a teacher. He is in his 70. So he said, when mother started the... the teachers are more like instructors who are there. They are facilitators. They are not those, they are there with their... They have the information, they have to facilitate. They are not instructors in that sense, that they are just going to teach you and instruct how to do it. So the joy is of learning to discover, to learn oneself in whatever area your nature takes you. So in the beginning when they started, so one of the teacher was sharing this with me, that the teachers were at loss what to do. So she said, "No structures. You be present and whoever wants to learn, they will come to you." Okay? He says, 1 year, hardly one or two or three students came out of all the rest. And he says, "I was one of them who was doing faki, who didn't go." So he says, "I used to feel bad also. But then teachers felt even worse that they are sitting in the class. Nobody is coming." So they went and spoke to the mother. He said, "No, no, you continue next year also, same way." So they said, "Same way, mother." He says, "See, this is true education. All the rest is all, you know, whitewash." So, okay. He says, "Second year again, maybe few more, but that's it." So, third year again, mother said, "You continue. Few more." But teachers got so restless that they say, "Okay, you want a then structure, then make a structure, but also keep this parallelly." So, that's how now we have both these structures. This is a little bit structured education, not so structured, but a little bit structured. And also there is the free progress part. So it's very amazing how she, very new ways, now its world is moving toward that. You see, when you talk about digital learning, all this self-learning, she foresaw it long back. So no degrees, no diplomas. What are they going to do? Well, that's where it's a leap of faith. Many of the students I know, they are supported by some unseen hand. They end up doing, I would say, very well, some of them, and fairly well. But though that is not the idea here. It's not about satisfying ambition. They love to learn. Something else happens. So this is how it is. In selection also, there is nothing like a formal interview. There is nothing like a donation. So, of course, there are certain challenges like 6 year onwards. They can stay in boarding. If the child comes earlier, parents have to stay. If parents have to stay, they have to shift. All these issues are there. So that's a different story altogether. So this is the background of the center of education. Then in 51, when it started, the mother herself was one of the teachers. She didn't take the position of the headmistress. If you look at it, it's something so amazing. So she was one of the teachers, and I think Pavitrada was the registrar, if I'm not mistaken. And so on, there have been different registrars. And she was one of the teachers when she would take the class. That's how you see the evening classes which we read. So then teachers and students would come. Basically it was for students. She would take class in the evening in French. So it was both a class in French as well as through that their questions were being answered. Now, when people came to know mother is taking classes and what questions, then they also started joining. So slowly you will see, you know, that playground was full of all the teachers, students, sadhak, because everybody is a student when Divine Mother is teaching. So if you read those conversations from 51 onwards, you will get the exact essence of the Upanishads. What is Upanishad? Literally it means sitting at the feet of the Guru. And the guru is transmitting the knowledge directly, touching the heart of the disciple. This is exactly how it was going on. Mother was sitting in a chair and all the little tiny children, I mean, she broke all barriers. They are sitting, and when you read the questions, you wonder. Of course, she was planting the questions. So it is literally, they are, all of them are Upanishads. They don't have a name, because she went beyond all these names. And so when people ask Upanishads, please include all the volumes of the mother, because they are the highest knowledge which is given in such wonderful terms through the method of question and answer, which in many of the ancient Indian discourses. And that's why when one of the, I think, was it Jagannath Vidya Alankar, or anyway, I have forgotten the name, Vidyavrat, one very well-known Vedic scholar who had come here, he was so happy. He said, I was having a dream that one day something like a Gurukul along the ancient lines of ancient India would be established in India. And now I know I can leave my body in a satisfied way, that here is one. Now there is no word like Gurukul here. It's not like medium is Sanskrit. It's not like they are taught scriptures. But they are equipped in a way that they can directly communicate and connect with the eternal scripture inside. So that's a long journey, and of course it's a long journey. The ashram, school, Auroville, all these are projects she has initiated. She spoke about the ashram school that, take my word that one day this will be the highest seat of knowledge upon earth. And she says it may take 50 years, 100 years. I may or may not be physically present amongst you. I can imagine. It may take 100 years, 150 years. Something very similar I could say about the ashram. People just see, just things on the surface. So with this little background, I could go on and on, because it's a wonderful subject. But we'll read from her writings. First of all, people know Sri Aurobindo's message, the symbol. They know mother symbol. But there is a symbol that the mother gave to the university center, Sri Aurobindo International Center of Education. And I'll just flip the book. This is the symbol. It's the combined symbol of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And the mother gave its meaning. It joined Sri Aurobindo and the mother. The effective manifestation of Ishwara and Ishwari in union. This is the symbol of the Sri Aurobindo International Center of Education. Now, if you see this way, another idea about Gurukul. So what was the Gurukul? Gurukul was where the Guru and his partner, they were the ones who were running, and all the children who came, they were regarded as their children. In fact, they were now, they were identified as their children. It was not like I am a king's child. No. Now you are all children of the Guru and the Guru Patni. Now here we don't have Guru Patni, but we have Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And so in a way she was saying, now we are your parents and we take care of you. And that is something which is amazing. I know so many stories of children, even those who went stray. After all kinds of things are there. But how they has taken care as literally divine parents. So it's Gurukul in, even in that sense. And again, it's Gurukul in the sense that every kind of thing is taught, not just physical, not just intellectual education, but emotional education, spiritual education, the physical education, which is emphasized. They learn all kinds of things, fencing, judo, karate, swimming, boxing, and both boys and girls equally. So it is Gurukul, but upgraded to the 21st century, I would say. You know, with the conditions of today's times, it's a model for times to come. So this is something very wonderful. And she saw this university center, later on Center of Education, as the most fitting memorial to Sri Aurobindo's name. So because he saw, it would give concrete expression to the fact that his work continues with unabated vigor. So what was her message for Sri Aurobindo Memorial Convention on 24th April 1951, when she started this university center? the message she gave is, Sri Aurobindo is present in our midst. So 51, she made it very clear. Let there be no misgivings about it. And with all the power of his creative genius, he presides over the formation of the university center. So it was he who was directing everything, but of course, depending on each one's receptivity. And the mother would often say, she would meet him and he would say certain things, and that's how many things took shape. Which for years he considered as one of the best means of preparing the future humanity to receive the supramental light. So the purpose of the center of education was not degrees to make them, you know, I have seen even people who profess well-known integral school, some other school, and then they publish that, you know, so many students got selected, so many got this. This is not what they wanted at all. I mean, anybody can do whatever they feel like, but just we should once again remind ourselves that that's not the whole purpose of integral education, is not that. So what is the purpose? She says very clearly, preparing the future humanity. That means that humanity is not yet there. Look at the choice of words. So she has started a project keeping in mind that there would be children coming in the future who would need this, who will not be ready for the so-called formal structured education. Look at the word. She is not saying that for preparing humanity for the future. She is saying preparing the future humanity. That those who came that time were by default. But they would be more and more over 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Children who are more and more ready for this kind of a education. That's what is happening today. Of course, everybody cannot be accommodated in the school because just about 15 students a year, because some people who may be listening to our talks may think, okay, let's apply. It's very difficult to get because there is no selection criteria, and very few students because they cannot be really accommodated. As simple as that. So this should be like an example which should be replicated elsewhere, but in the true sense. Keeping the name is and not living that is worse, much worse. It's much better you don't keep the name and try to bring in something of that little bit to the extent you can. So preparing the future humanity for what? To receive the supramental light. That's why so much stress on physical education. That will transform the elite of today. So very clear, mother does not make, who are the elite? Elite are not Brahmins or, you know, people high caste. No, elite are those, she has explained, and you know, those who within the limits of humanity has arrived at some kind of a height inwardly, and they know that this is not enough, they seek to go further. So they are the elite in the original sense, the word Arya, the noble, those who inwardly. So it's not like people come just for career options. They're, oh, very nice, they will learn French in a nice way, good atmosphere, and then come out and take a job. So she is using the word elite in that sense. Elite of today into a new race, manifesting upon earth the new light and force and life. So it is meant for facilitating the process of the new manifestation. In his name, Sri Aurobindo's name, I open today this convention meeting here with the purpose of realizing one of his most cherished ideals. So this is something which Sri Aurobindo himself would want, a project like even Auroville. These are projects which, you know, Sri Aurobindo would want, but mother is fulfilling them in her own way. So everywhere we have, you know, in every school we have a prayer. So in dip, like for instance, I studied in a convent school, so we used to read that prayer, Our Father, Thou art in heaven. Thy will be done, thy kingdom comes, give us this day our daily bread. Then there are, I think, Arya Samaj, those schools, where they, Asadoma Sadgamya, which is also in KV, one of the prayer which is adopted, beautiful prayer. So all these prayers, so she has also given a prayer, student's prayer. But what is this prayer? It's amazing. So the prayer is, student's prayer, make of us the hero warriors we aspire to become. She is preparing hero warriors. So how does she define which battle we have to fight, we have to go out, who is our enemy? Now see, she says, may we fight successfully the great battle of the future that is to be born, because 56 the future started manifesting. So she is saying the battle has to be fought between the past and the future. A battle is not with somebody outside you. Battle is between the past ways of life, habits, conceptions. I'll read out that part, that you know what she says about these things. A progress guided by the soul and not subject to habits, conventions or preconceived ideas. It's a very high starting point. So all our ideas, plenty we carry, and we want children to become like us, an aggrandized figure of us, a magnified image of our ego self. We want them to make the parents proud, maybe the society proud, maybe the nation proud. We want them to, you know, reach that point where people say, oh, he is so successful. Where is he? None of this. All these are all our conventions and conceptions. Or they should be very well behaved, wake up in the morning, touch the parents' feet, even if they are Ravan and Mahisasur, because, you know, parents are parents after all. So, none of that. So freed from all these conceptions and conventions. For what? So here she says, against the past that seeks to endure, so that the new things may manifest and we may be ready to receive them. So what are the new things? First of all, the minimum is truth. That's what she said, that you should teach the children the certitude of truth's final victory. One thing she wanted children to carry. Again, you see what does it imply? Truth's final victory. Satyameva jayate nanritam. He says everything else is later. Children must be taught to, they must carry in themselves the conviction of truth's final victory. So this is the basis. Because truth will win, not falsehood. Regardless of whatever we may see, appearances. This they must carry. Second is, they must grow up in an atmosphere of peace, harmony and love. That's why she was not very happy when they stayed with parents. Because parents brought in atavism. They brought in relatives. They brought in their own so-called value systems, which had become effete, which have become effete. Now you don't perform yajna like outwardly, you perform the yajna within. So many of these effete systems they carried. But she wanted them to become authentic children, carry that fire inside, fire of truth. That again we find in the ancient story of Satyakam Javala, the only story or one of the stories which Sri Aurobindo himself started writing, portion from the Chandogya Upanishad. Satyakam Javala's story is amazing, where the boy is asked, well, what is your parentage and lineage? He said, I don't know. I asked my mother. She said, I don't know who your father is, because I served with many masters. But this I know, that you are my son. And when she goes, when the boy, chit of a boy, 5-year-old, goes, Satyakam, to tell his mentor, the teacher, Dittudum Gautama. So he says, somebody who can say this so courageously, and your mother, you belong to the elite of humanity. This is the elite. Elite is not by birth or by wealth, either of that. It's not by outer qualifications and, but this is the elite who has the courage. The mother has the courage to say, I don't know who your father is, but I am your mom, this for sure. And the child has the courage to say, I don't know who my father is. If you take it, you take it. And he says, this is the sign of the highest type. So you see, this was the ancient truth. What it has become, we need not speak about it. So she's ushering a new age where your inner truth is much more important, which you have to discover, of course. Not inner truth is not surface truth. Heart says right means, doesn't mean that heart is subject to desires, passions, desired soul. Not that, but your deeper self within, in the heart, that truth, that must express. So this what she wants, this is what the children here recite and it goes into their system. Many times even parents don't understand why are they not following the normal customs. Well, they won't. They don't. And they should not. Otherwise, why are they here? But they, one can see there is a new emergence taking place, which is very unique, which unless you are yourself in connection with the new consciousness, you won't understand what is happening. You have to be connected. Even when they take up the old, they give it a completely new sense. It is for launching toward the future, not for getting stuck into the past. So this is something very beautiful. This was 6th January 1952. And then something very interesting, how to impart this education, or for example in every department of the ashram, this is what applies, should applies. She says, this is 61 message, 6th September, we are not here to do only a little better what the others do, but okay. Outside they get 95%, here they will get 99%. Very clear. If that's what one wants to do, then there are so many places in the world. We are here to do what the others cannot do because they do not have the idea that it can be done. How to do it? She left it to each one to discover. Of course, she has given plenty of hints. If you read their works, plenty, almost in every area. But still, you have to discover it by opening yourself. And there are so many stories of teachers who discovered their own way of dealing. Because there cannot be one standard format. That's the old world formula. There is no fixed syllabus. So that's all in the old world. So if the students want to learn more, the teacher gives more. If he is, of course, ready to give more. If they don't want to learn, the limit is decided by the student. So students don't just decide the teacher in the higher classes. Students decide the teachers. But also it's their limit. So it's their quest. And the teacher has to, just like the days of the Upanishads. So she says, we are here to do what the others cannot do because they do not have the idea that it can be done. We are here to open the way of the future to children who belong to the future. So again, she has made it clear that maybe 100 students will come. Not all are ready for the future. But who knows out of them? Some are ready, some will take time, some couple of lives, it's okay. But there are some who are ready for the future. That's what the ashram is also. Same thing applies. Not all are ready for the future, doesn't matter. We are all in different stages of preparation. It's a long process after all. But once you are in it, those who are ready for the future, it becomes more and more easy. We are here to open the way of the future to children who belong to the future. And then she says something very, very interesting, which I feel is worth meditating upon for this birth anniversary of Sri Aurobindo, 153rd, which we are soon going to have on 15th August. So I often feel, and this has been going on inside me, that we celebrate, we have functions, we have organized cultural events. I don't know what is that got to do with. So many cultural events. Some Bharatnatyam dance somewhere. Some students will dance. And all kinds of things. Sometimes I wonder. And then it's over. You spend money like any other government organization that you celebrate. You get some funds. You utilize it. And you have on paper that we have celebrated. This is not what Mother and Sri Aurobindo would want. It's okay, one can do anything. They are like, Bhole Baba, they accept anything. But look what Mother is saying. This is something very, very beautiful. We are here to open the way of the future to children who belong to the future. Anything else is not worth the trouble and not worthy of Sri Aurobindo's help. And I just absolutely love this. Worth meditating upon. All else we may do, organize seminars, debates, distribute leaflets, questions, people hold quiz for on Sri Aurobindo. No. What is the future? How we can prepare ourselves? That is something amazing. And there are no fixed answers. Let each one at least contemplate that there is a future which is coming. We are still stuck with the past and the present. So she says, anything else is not worth the trouble. It's waste of time actually. Week-long celebration of Sri Aurobindo's birthday. Oh, what will happen? Some seminar, some conventional talk, some dances, some events, some culture events. Anything else is not worth the trouble and not worthy of Sri Aurobindo's help. She's not saying Sri Aurobindo will not help. He is, you know, like Shiva receives even a belpatra. That's okay. But what we should offer him? We should offer him our present and past for the future. The way he conceives, not future as we want. So this is something. And then, as I said, the base is truth. And truth is not the way we conceive. Outer truth, superficial truth. As the other way, truth is itself a subject. And somebody once asked me, should we speak the truth? I said, first you should know the truth. We think our outer thought, feeling, reaction, that is truth. When you go inside, layers after layers in which truth is hidden. What we speak on the surface is an instant justification of whatever we are doing. We fabricate motives, we justify responses. That's not truth. When you go deep within, then you discover truth, and it can stun us, completely shake us, because very difficult to see that. That's what mother would always say. So she says, let the truth be your master and your guide. This is a message on 16th December 67, which is the school opening day. She has freed everything. People talk about secular and religious. Why do you have to use these terms? At least truth is something which is everywhere. Science, spirituality, religion, wherever you use it. Let truth be the master. That's the baseline. There is no controversy when it comes to science and spirituality. If you take truth as your, discover it. If the scientist says truth is only material, that means you have limited, fixed truth. You have made a religion. Equally, if the religion is said, truth is my conception of God, my holy book, then again you have limited. So she says, let truth be your master and your guide. We aspire for the truth and its triumph in our being and our activities. Because we are truth, but in a bundle of falsehoods. And we have to slowly, that action of truth has to remove this. It can be very painful, unnerving. That's why it's not easy. People want to join the ashram, so Sri Aurobindo would always, there were many more he would discourage. Because it's not easy. So that layer by layer it has to work. First one has to discover it. Then its working starts. And it's working when it touches those layers which are completely into things which are false. Then it's very painful. Very few can bear it. Let the aspiration for the truth be the dynamism of our efforts. And then she gives something wonderful as a prayer. O truth, we want to be guided by thee. May thy reign come upon earth. She has not used the word supramental. But what is supramental? Truth consciousness. What is its action? It releases the truth within us. It releases the truth in the world. That's what we see happening. Our emotional, sentimental cry, our weeping, our joys, our, it doesn't matter. Just wait. It's stripping everything layer by layer. Nothing is final. Wait. Everything that is hidden will emerge. And that's what is happening today. When one lives in the truth, one is above all contradictions. Why? Because then, even within yourself, and I feel one should have the courage to acknowledge the truth within oneself, that's the minimum, and offer it to the Divine Mother so that she can work upon all of it and cure us. She has gone on to say, truth cures. So there is so much within us in wraps of falsehood, and she alone can cure it. So these are some of the messages. They continue. Then there is one very interesting. People want to understand, why are we here in the Sri Aurobindo ashram? This is what I'll read for today. Why are we here? So people often wonder, So one should be clear that what does the ashram stand for. So this message is 24 July 1951. Obviously, that time many of the parents had come. So there is one in 47 where she speaks about an advice to newcomers that we have already read. It's page 47 or 49 of this book. I'm forgetting the year, I think 54 or 51. This is because a lot of people were coming and they were obviously asking. Parents, teachers, and naturally many new people, they heard about it, learnt about it. So it's like, why are we here? They should know. Why are we here in the Sri Aurobindo ashram? This is in very small two or three paragraphs summarizes the entire thing. There is an ascending evolution in nature which goes from the stone to the plant, from the plant to the animal, from the animal to man. The basic of Sri Aurobindo's teaching. But we think man is the last. Here the teaching begins to part. Because man is, for the moment, the last rung at the summit of the ascending evolution, he considers himself as the final stage in this ascension and believes there can be nothing on earth superior to him. In that, he is mistaken. So you see, what is the solution of all the problems of earth? It is the transformation of humanity. Anything else you may do, if man doesn't change, you may have the best systems, best roads, best government, the best leader, it will still be the same because human nature is imperfect. How logical, actually, if you look at it, seems yes. But why didn't anybody think? Because nobody knew it's possible. Though it's the most logical thing. After all, if evolution is there upon earth, it cannot stop with man. So it's very simple, very direct. So she says, man thinks he is final, but he is a transitional being. In that, he is mistaken in thinking he is the superior, the end product of creation. In his physical nature, he is yet almost wholly an animal. No mixing of words. A thinking and speaking animal. But still an animal in his material habits and instincts. Undoubtedly, nature cannot be satisfied with such an imperfect result. It's so logical. This was the thought that I used to have as an adolescent. That if this is what God has created, or nature, whatever, then you find difficult to say God created man. What is, like, if you look at it, even if you look at just the physical body, though it is so beautiful, wonderful, but still, so many things. You have to eat food, then it processes, becomes waste, releases toxins. What a complicated process this is. And, you know, so many possibility of errors. Of course, it's wonderful at one level. But look at it that, you know, what a precarious balance we walk through. You eat a little extra food and somewhere it gets blocked in your arteries. You eat a little extra salt. I mean, it's a precarious balance that human beings tread. It cannot be called as the perfect body. Well, so if there is evolutionary force consciously, there is a consciousness behind it, truth consciousness or divine consciousness, then it cannot be finished with man. So that's what she is reminding us. She endeavors, who? Nature. That's why we see the restlessness. She endeavors to bring out a being who will be to man what man is to the animal. It's a sea change. In fact, she says the difference between the supramental being and man will be more than the difference between man and the animal. Because his faculties, his way of perceiving. That's why in the beginning she says he'll be not only much misunderstood, he'll be at risk. Because people won't understand. He's a different species, a different specimen. And whatever we don't understand, we feel threatened with and we try to harm. Ashram itself has faced attacks. Because you don't understand and people don't care to understand. They misunderstand. Because they have only one criteria to judge by their own. So she even said that, you know, a special protection and a power has to manifest to protect them because they will be misunderstood. So she speaks of this. A being who will remain a man in an external form. So here she is speaking of the Superman, not yet the supramental being. And yet whose consciousness will rise far above the mental and its slavery to ignorance. So you see a human, but is not human. Now this idea has come in the fantasy world in a very different way. Cryons and, you know, they say he is from that planet, intergalactic, all these fantasy things have come. And there are people who have studied, oh, I am a cryonic, I am a baryonic. But basically it's a new consciousness which has started operating. People can't understand that there is a section of humanity which has begun to look at world very differently and act upon it very differently. And this is creating a disturbance in many, even, you know, madnesses, because it's a different thing altogether. Right now it's like a transitional. How would the gorilla, the chimpanzee and lions would have looked upon the caveman? On one side, bit awed, bit frightened, and also on the other side, is he a good meat for me? Let me try. Because he was weak compared to them. But he had fire. So that's how they describe. There's a whole movie based on that, The Jungle Book. So it's like, the animals say, this fellow, actually we can put him down. Group of hyenas, gorilla, chimpanzee, they can beat black and blue, the tiger and lion they can eat. But what they were scared of? They were scared of the fire that man learned to light. And he used intelligence. So he devised spears and stone. This was scary to them. That they've got methods of fighting which we don't have. Especially the fire. They're very scared of fire. And even till date, animals are scared of fire. And of course, it's a symbol. Same way if you light up the inner fire. But it's a symbol because it's something very new. They don't know how to handle it. So this is how they discovered that though he is weak compared to us, looks like that. But this fellow has something which, and the light of intelligence which is there in human eyes. Mother says animals perceive it. If you look at the eyes of an animal, you will see a glassy appearance. But in human beings, human eyes, you will see some touch of the soul. What is called a spark. That somewhere one can see it. So she says that this will be the new being who will rise far above the mental and its slavery to ignorance, even though in appearance he'll be human. Sri Aurobindo came upon earth to teach this truth to men. All other things he has said, and there are plenty of things, but this is the focus. He told them that man is only a transitional being living in a mental consciousness, but with the possibility of acquiring a new consciousness. So we are all visa applicants for the new creation. Of course, some visas have been approved. Some are waiting for the flight. Some are in the flight. Some have landed on the promised land. This is the idea of promised land. That, you know, Jews will discover the promised land. Promised land is the land which is, you know, the higher domains of being. The higher domains of consciousness. So she says, and she named this consciousness the truth consciousness. This is the supramental. But this is not a truth. It's a truth that sees the totality of things. It's an all-comprehending, all-apprehending truth. It's not truth as we understand. Because just like we use the word God and different people give different meanings. This is the supramental truth which has a total comprehension and which has a complete apprehension of the future, the past and the present. It's a very different kind of meaning of the word truth. And capable of living a life perfectly harmonious, good and beautiful, happy and fully conscious. During the whole of his life upon earth, Sri Aurobindo gave all his time to establish in himself this consciousness he called supramental and to help those gathered around him to realize it. So this is the word supramental. It's the truth consciousness, the truth of the divine, not truth as we know and understand. And if we realize this truth, it's not about living life, wearing an ochre robe. All this is not important. What is important is to live by that truth. And what does it mean? A life perfectly harmonious, good and beautiful, happy and fully conscious. The word fully conscious. So this is the new life. And then she tells all the people who have gathered here, children, teachers, as I said, that was the time when all of them had come around. And of course, the inmates of the ashram, those who have come for various reasons. We have the immense privilege of having come quite young to the ashram. That is to say, still plastic and capable of being molded according to this new ideal and thus become the representatives of the new race. Not yet the new race, but representatives. Here, in the ashram, you are in the most favorable conditions with regard to the environment, the influence, the teaching and the example. To awaken in you this supramental consciousness and to grow according to its law. So ashram or outside, she has answered in a very beautiful way. Here, conditions wise, influence wise, atmosphere wise, you are in the most favorable conditions. And that's very evident. You move out, you understand the difference. Not that yoga cannot be done elsewhere. It can be done anywhere. At the same time, one cannot deny that there are the conditions here which definitely facilitate it. Simple things like work. So work is organized in such a way that, you know, you have time maybe to study, maybe to sit quietly, maybe to, you know, take a walk, do physical education, sit at the samadhi. All this is wonderful. We don't realize its importance till one works outside. You're not doing work to please somebody, not for promotion, not for money, but simply in the spirit of service to the mother. So many things here as a baseline are wonderful. And you're not asked to renounce. So some people wonder that, but you know, now that is even more beautiful. That if you renounce things outwardly, you carry the seeds inside. But you are in the midst of everything in the world. So the only thing that will work here is inward. So if you have inwardly renounced your egoism and desire, nobody else except you and the divine will know. Even you may not know, but divine will surely know. So it's not like I have outwardly renounced, but I am carrying all these seeds inside. So that's why it's a much more true life, authentic life. Now she says, finally, now all depends on your will and your sincerity. She has provided the cooked food because she is the mother. So she has cooked the food, very nice meal, wonderful. All that we need is to eat it. But human nature starts doubting. Is this healthy? We have all kinds of people in the ashram. That's the same thing, no? Equivalent. So is this healthy? Is the company of people good when I'm eating food who are around me? She knows, she has cooked the food. Take it. How will they? All kinds of things begin to play because if I may put it very squarely, the devil does not want us to eat that food. As simple as that. That's what she writes in one of her prayers in Japan. That the food that I had prepared for man refused it. So I gave it to you, O Lord. And she is writing about converting the Lord of falsehood. So he does not want us to eat this meal. She is prepared. All that she wants is to eat. We can even play with her mother. Please put it in me. She will do that. But you have to take. But if your mind is full of doubts, you have to take it with faith and joy that, well, it's her food. That's what I keep saying. Ashram is her place. Good, bad is a different thing altogether. All kinds of things are everywhere. But by the way, I have seen many ashrams. Huh? This is one of the best places, even that way. But that I can say based on my experience of seeing plenty of places, good amount of places. If you have the will no more to belong to ordinary humanity, it's not about outer rules and regulations, but inwardly, in your habits, in your understanding, in your thought, in your feelings, in your reaction. If there is an ordinary way of responding and there is a higher way. No more to be merely evolved animals. If your will is to become men of the new race, realizing Sri Aurobindo's supramental ideal, living a new and higher life upon a new earth, you will find here all the necessary help to achieve your purpose. 1000% true. If one really comes here with this idea, really sincerely for the yoga, you'll never want to go away. But yoga, Shurasya Dhara, not a cakewalk, easy walk. Because this place provides you with everything. Every reaction of people within you, response, everything is meant to really ultimately help us to evolve toward the future. Otherwise, people start seeing all kinds of things and want to go. You will profit fully by your stay in the ashram and eventually become living examples for the world. So this is the whole thing which you have been doing in synthesis. First to discover it within, realize within, then you become a living center of the divine in the world. So she has given a very wonderful reason why, and it's up to us if we are sincere or not. See, Janina Stroka lived only for 9 years, if I am not mistaken. And what the mother wrote about her and how she corresponded this, that beautiful book, A Captive of Her Love. And how she would start relating, and you know, she was Polish nurse, and how she would start writing that, well, I have a headache, and then she says, today the maid servant has not come. Oh, it's a good opportunity to progress. She's not complaining about it. And she progressed so well. There are people about whom mother said, you know, in 1 year she has taken a leap and progressed. So, whereas there are some who can continue to stay. This is our choice. This choice she has left. Food she has prepared and kept. She has provided an atmosphere, and it continues. People who say that, you know, ashram then and ashram now, excuse me, that inner core completely continues. And that atmosphere, that help, everything is there. We have to just connect. Yes, conditions are not and cannot be the same as 30 years back. They will change. Another 30 years, it will further change. Because outer things have to change. But it is also a beautiful thing, because we learn to adapt, grow, take the challenge of the outer, integrate it with the inner life which is growing. So that's the process of evolution. It was never meant to be a very quiet place where in a corner you sit for meditation. Well, for that the mother would send people elsewhere. It's a place of transformation, not just a place for finding peace. Peace can be found so many places, including the Himalayas. Here is the stress of transformation. As Champak Lal ji put it so beautifully, he says, I came here to serve Sri Aurobindo and the mother, something like that he said. I came here to do yoga. Here I found the stress of transformation. But very soon, it took over me to do the service of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, something to that extent. And that, because it was shown to him, this is his path. So, you may come to do yoga, you have your idea of yoga, but there is a tremendous stress of transformation, meaning thereby you cannot continue the old ways. You'll be thrown out inwardly. You can't stay. You know, if you stick to the old ways, they will come. They will come and go. You have to work through it. You have to hold on to the mother or be held by her. So they will come, because the old ways don't leave so easily. But every time we turn to her, refer to her, not only those things go away, you take a step forward. All that seems like an obstacle becomes a stepping stone to her progress. So this is the ashram, one of her very simple 3 or 4 passages which summarizes all about what the Sri Aurobindo ashram is and the sadhana here, the goal here, and how one has to go through it. Jai Ma.